Everybody, and welcome to Conversations in the Arts. I'm Mark Corte, the Executive Director of Huntington Arts Council, and I want to welcome you to tonight's conversation on amplifying voices in the arts. First, I want to say thank you to the New York State Council on the Arts for funding programs with us. This is through our general operating support. Suffolk County Office of Community Affairs has funded us for our gallery programming, and the town of Huntington also gives us general support. We put this concept together to help expand the concept of the gallery, that the gallery would be more than a place to just come in and look and at the art and enjoy the art, but more of a community center. We've had to rethink that in the past several months, but that's behind what's going on here. Next month, November 12th, is our next Conversation in the Arts, and we do a variety of topics. So we're going from this one to a little more classical topic, which will be classical music. Our panelists will be Lauren Ausubel from Oyster Bay Music Festival, Linda Richardson from Evoco Voice Collective, and David Stewart Wiley of the Orchestra Long Island. I will be moderating that. If anybody is interested in curating one of these events, I may have a few open towards the end. Send me an email, it's on our website, and just let me know what you want. And if it fits in with, we can get in sync on it, I'd be very happy to have some guest curators. And speaking of which, tonight we have a guest curator. I began speaking with Jose Tudevan several months ago. I mean, I don't even remember, and we've gone through many iterations, and very happy to have him I don't need to talk. He has to talk. I'm very happy you put this together. Why don't I just let you introduce the panelists, and then we can get on with tonight's conversation. I did forget one very important thing. Times are hard. If anyone can make a donation to us, there's a donate now button there. We would greatly appreciate it. Nothing's too small. Nothing's too large either, but we would appreciate it. Take it away, Jose.
Thank you, Mark, for the introduction. Well, first of all, once again, thank you, Huntington Arts Council, for allowing me to put this panel together today. I'm here, you know, my name is Jose Tudevan. I'm the founder of Colored Colors. If you guys aren't aware of what Colored Colors is, it's an organization that I founded about 3 years ago now. My goal and my mission is to connect creatives from all over Long Island, which now has expanded to the New York City area, as well as the tri-state area in general. We pretty much connect the creative and the local community through events, you know, that we put together for everybody. This is not limited to any type of, you know, medium. We work with artists, artisans, musicians, poets, other curators as well. We've had culinary arts involved and all of the above within the creative field. And, you know, at this point, within the 3 years, we've been able to service over 300 artists and over 25 events throughout that time. So I want to say thank you to everybody who has supported Colored Colors throughout, you know, these last couple of years. We've definitely grown a good community to have here on Long Island and throughout just New York. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very happy to, you know, continue to lead the ship. So today's topic was through a conversation that we had this summer, as a lot has been going on, as we all know, and it's very important for us to amplify our voices during this time, especially coming from different backgrounds and, you know, different kinds of lanes. That's what I really wanted to create here with this panel, was to bring people together, which I'm going to briefly introduce, well, let them introduce themselves in a second, but we have all different types of lanes in the creative world here today. So, you know, we're here to have an open discussion, just to talk of how everything around us and what we need to amplify our voices in this current day of age, and, you know, the changes that need to be made within what we see in the art community. So I'm gonna hand it over to our first panelist, JB, and then we'll go from there.
Appreciate it. My name is James Barreto. Most people just call me JB for short. I'm a creative consultant, a curator, a producer. I've worked in small events. I have a background in collegiate events. I really cut my teeth in campus activities, found a passion for arts and dove headfirst into that, and realized that building relationships with young artists and up and coming artists was a pathway to break into the scene, like into gallery spaces and be a person that can get people who look like me into those spaces. I started curating shows, worked with some galleries across Long Island, started working with artists and produced several events. Something that I've done, some notable things. I've been able to work with the New York Times for a Latino Heritage event. I've spoken at Google for a Latino Film Festival. And I've been able to work in some galleries like Wright Bart Gallery on Long Island in the past couple of years. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys today, and I look forward to it.
All right, thank you, James. And next up is Jeanette Berry.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeanette Berry, also JB, but we'll leave you to be JB tonight, James. I am a singer, songwriter, poet, and I guess prose writer as well. I have begun my own publication on Medium called Constellation Noir, which is a space for Black artists to write about Black art, specifically Black music, Black theater, and Black literature. I have a full-length album, two EPs, and a new single out. I sing R&B, jazz, soul, and you can find me everywhere at JeanetteBerry.com. And I also teach, so I'm an educator as well. So that's me.
Thank you, Jeanette. And now I have Dylan Brown.
Good night, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you so much, Jose. My name is Dylan Brown. I am a spoken word artist from Long Island, New York, Brentwood, New York. And I got my start back in high school. It's over 10 years later. And I founded the company D. Brown Poetry. And I do poetry workshops in schools, Henry Viscardi, Brentwood High School, Harriet Eisman in Long Beach, to name a couple of the schools that we perform at. So we do poetry workshops and poetry performances. And I look forward to learning and as well as, you know, presenting something as well with regards to my poetry and everything that I do from a spoken word aspect. Thank you so much.
Lastly, but not least, Joseph Santarpia.
Thanks, Jose. Appreciate being on the panel. A lot of great people here, and just starting to meet a couple of you. So Jeanette and Dylan, great to meet you. So again, my name's Joe Santarpia. I'm a multimedia artist, mostly painter and an educator. I've been taking my art career seriously for the last maybe 5 years. I've shown in Los Angeles, Spain, Long Island City. And my work comes from physical experience, trying to share the kind of the fleeting, delicate, the fragile nature of our bodies, and try to share that sentiment with my audience, and especially working with young people to share the different types of art making that occurs and the blending of genres, whether it's writing or video and the sciences along with art. It's really wonderful to be able to teach and make art to inspire and feel inspired.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. And I think that's everyone on the panel. Yes, Mark.
I was gonna say, let me just jump in here. And as I said before, I get paternal when I think about things. I'm at a different phase of my career than the panel is here. And I think that's a great thing. You know, I'm in the sunset of my career of working in the arts. And you know, where it goes once I retire, I will still be involved in the arts, just in different manners. But I am so enthusiastic that, you know, there are people that are moving the arts forward and continue to move the arts forward. The arts are in great hands. And you know, you're bringing us along. I know what I do, I know what I'm good at, but people shouldn't be doing that in 5 years or in 10 years or in 15 years. We have to keep progressing. And I'm just really heartened by what I hear from all of you. And like, I've done my job. You know, you guys are just so poised And it's so ready and, you know, already part of the what I like to call the cultural landscape of Long Island, because it's a great landscape on Long Island. And kudos to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. All right. So I guess we're going to get started, not to delay this anymore. So we're going to follow a couple, you know, questions that we had picked before that we decided as a group that would be, you know, important to talk about during this conversation and allow us to amplify our voices. I'll be moderating, but the panelists will mostly be, you know, taking their turns speaking. Everyone, please be respectful to one another. I think we should be good on that. And, you know, we'll see where this goes. So I think we did our introductions. And I believe let's go into the first topic of how do you think the arts help promote equality? And, you know, if we could just hear some examples from everyone regarding that questions. So whoever wants to take the floor, feel free. If you guys want to have your mics on, all four of the panelists, I'm going to go on mute. And feel free to discuss, guys.
So I guess I'll begin. I'm just going to jump in. I think the only way that the arts can promote equality is if there is equitable relationships within arts institutions. So that begins, if we're talking about Long Island, in our institutions on Long Island, making sure that the representation of those on boards, those in decision-making places are diverse enough to have ears and eyes everywhere, to understand their blind spots and to be able to be comfortable with uncomfortable conversations of things that we may not know and how the art can service those conversations. Art is a vehicle for equity and equality as long as we make sure that we don't try to devalue or put down anybody else's art because we may not understand it. We may not have studied it. It might not be one of the high arts, but it's really important that we remember those things and we also have the equity at the table as well. And also the equity across tables so that we are in conversation with other community members and other community organizations so that we all can have conversations regarding the art. And that's the only way that there can be equity in art, especially on Long Island and especially in smaller communities for me.
Yeah, the first thing I was going to bring up was echoing yours, Jeanette, about institutions. I'm coming from more of a like an academic space. I went to Stony Brook for a Master of Fine Arts, and I saw behind the curtain of, you know, like a fine art program, even though super small program, great nevertheless. One of the things I was going to say was about what I've noticed, just like sitting in on certain classes with like professors that I admire. One thing that I've noticed is the way that information gets shared best, it seemed from just observing and listening, was the young people, the kids in the class asking, like there's a desire mm-hmm. for it. So it's just about like answering the call and like providing and producing. So I've tried to take on that role as an educator. I mostly taught drawing classes, and then I'm just trying to pull in everything I can to show like an array of people and backgrounds, types of art, histories. So definitely I was gonna, you know, the institution is one place where the kind of the stakes are high for what art is capable of.
You know, great point.
Is one place where the kind of the stakes are high for what art is capable of.
Yeah. I think we lagged a little bit, but I don't know if Dylan or James, you guys want to hop in on the question on promoting the arts?
Yeah. I definitely echo a lot of the sentiments that were said. In my particular journey of discovering art and having access and like equitable access to it, I think the biggest hurdle has been the perception. So I was lucky enough to work at Suffolk County Community College through the work study program at the information desk. And that was like the moment where I realized like I really enjoyed art, because right behind me was the art gallery on campus and no one ever went in there. And I would have to like tell people like, there's some really cool stuff in here, like come take a look. And then that interest in art, because I was born in Queens and raised in the city, I would always go back and I realized like there was art fairs out there that I would go to. We're talking about like 2012, 10, 11, those years, I would go into Chelsea and just stroll into galleries. And I always share these stories because that's just my personality. Like I'll go up to anyone and just start a conversation. And I would go a lot of the times and I'd find out that like on Thursdays there would be openings. And sometimes I would like get there a little early and just sneak into like a private opening that you have to be on an RSVP list. And I would make conversation with artists and I just have this access to them. And that perception of like, oh, you're not supposed to be here. And I can't lie. Like there would be times where I felt like, am I out of place? But just my genuine interest in that is like something that persevered or prevailed and allowed me to have that access. And I say all that to say that a lot of times people through social media would be like, how do you hear about this? How do I get there? And I'm like, you literally just walk and go in. Like you just go to the gallery and walk in. Or whenever I would host, you know, or have openings, people would text me and say, what do I wear? Like, is there an entrance fee? And I'm like, you can come exactly as you are. You can wear whatever you want to wear. You know, you should feel comfortable in those spaces. And I think that perception of like, of not having access to it is the most difficult thing. And I think that's something that people have to get over. And it's just about showing up. But that is also met with the institutions being receptive to it, where there have been fairs or highbrow galleries, dare I say, that would look at me like, okay, well, you're not, you know, what do you really want from this? And I'm just like, I just want to appreciate the art as much as the next person. So it's the perception of that access and that equity to it, for sure.
Forgive me if my response is short and you know, straight to the point. But when I think of it, the question asks, does art promote equality, right? And so I broke that down a little bit and I reworded it in my head. Does art promote relationships? And if you were to ask the question, does art promote relationships? The answer is absolutely. And when we use those icebreaker, art as the icebreaker, we foster certain relationships and we get to know people on levels we would have not known had it not been for them displaying their talent, putting their talent on display.
Dylan, I know that you just spoke, we're just not seeing your face. We would love to. There we go. Give us a little narration. I think, you know, to touch on everybody's, I think we're all on the same page where, you know, it starts with the institutions as well, backing the accessibility for all of us. And, you know, and I do want to say that Hack has done that for a lot of artists out here, especially with Songwriter Night. We can always circle back to Diego Garcia's show, solo exhibition there. And, you know, that art does help promote equality and diversity in general. As you can see, we're all here and we're all from different backgrounds, all different lanes. So I guess we're going to go to the next topic of saying, you know, if there's any examples that everybody has for using your voice to promote diversity in the arts. So since we're on the, you know, equality, and now we're going to go into the diversity part of it. So if anybody has good examples to share today, you know, on how your voice has promoted that.
I performed at the Brentwood High School. Can you hear me? Can you see me? Sorry, not the Brentwood High School, the Brentwood Library. And I was expecting the audience, it wasn't what I was expecting. Brentwood, I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, very diverse, younger crowd. And that all of that depends on the promoter and how it was promoted. So it was promoted to an elder audience, so, you know, senior citizen. And I'm like, the pieces that I prepared I still have to do them, right? Because I prepared different types of pieces. And so I had to go ahead and do the pieces that I prepared. And after the set, they were asking me questions. I spoke about my experience coming from Trinidad, coming from a different country. Spoke about my early experiences in high school, dealing with all the good and the bad, right? The violence and all the opportunities that I was exposed to. But I would say, had it not been, and again, I feel like I'm piggybacking off the same thing, but had it not been for me just, you know, letting myself be free and let it flow and express myself, they would not be able to ask me certain questions and get to know me on another level and understand me from a different perspective.
I agree with that. I think it's important that in any of these spaces that artists find themselves in, that we do feel safe. As a woman musician, going to jam sessions in the city is sometimes nerve-wracking and uncomfortable because of the sexism and harassment that happens around women in jazz, women in music, and being at these sessions, because it's such a male-dominated space, you have to make sure that there is a safety net, or just not even a safety net, but an understanding that people can be safe and express themselves as authentically as possible. Going off of Dylan's point, if you're not authentic in your art, it's going to be really hard to get any bigger message across. So being able to feel safe in certain spaces is really important for that. And then we can show up as our full selves. But until we are able to really do that, it can be quite difficult to say, all right, I really want to show up as me, but not even on like a personal level, but am I safe? Like, am I physically, am I emotionally safe to be in this space and to bear myself as authentically as possible? And that's a question that a lot of people have to ask themselves. And that's not necessarily fair, but it should be something that artists can learn to take with them into these spaces and say, you know what, I'm going to make this a safe space for myself, but I'm also going to tell the people around me, this needs to be a safe space. And if you can't get with that, then you either need to leave or you need to not put me in this space any longer. So that's what I think.
Yeah, jumping off the producing spaces point, I think, you know, the way I got connected or met Jose, and I met JB at like the top of the year, maybe end of last year, probably. We've crossed paths, but by speaking to Dylan's point about like those relationships, that's how I got connected with Diego and Jose at like Long Island events that they curated. And it was really inspiring to see them modeling that authentic behavior. Like Diego and Jose, when I first met them, just like they are, they show up as them and they're firm in that. And it is really wonderful that they're not only like bringing that forward, but they're also making the space, right? Like Jose, you made this space for us, you know what I mean? So like I take a lot of inspiration from you and Diego for that passion, and JB too, from what I've seen from you. So thanks for that.
Before Jose go on, am I able to bear myself as authentically as possible? I love that point, Bachinet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I'm gonna actually write it down. I'm gonna write that down because I don't want to forget that.
No, and you guys speak about that energy, and like as the only person in this panel that doesn't necessarily have like a tangible product that's, which they create, but as a curator, I try to create that space. The passion that I have for going into spaces like that, like I've had experiences where I've been able to like make a beeline straight to the artist and be like, your work spoke to me, and they will make the time of day to speak to me because they see that passion in my eyes. And it's just like kind of like how Joe said, where it's just like, no, you really care. And like, oh, I see that you really care. And I obviously really care about my work. And then you have those great, amazing conversations. Whether that's like after a show, if you're lucky enough, like a music show or an auditory experience where you're lucky enough to get to the artist, or if it's a visual show where you can just, you know, snag the artist's ear for a couple moments and you have those person-to-person connections. And then sometimes you see like, wow, there's a diverse array of people that can share within an experience that the artist provided. And then that like can make great relationships. I've had friendships like Jose, like Joe, that have come about in the last couple of years because it's like our commonalities and our interests and what we're passionate about like bond us, versus there's some other people that from different walks of life that I have different things in common with. But through the art and the diversity of people that come to that point of like doing what they love, yeah, I think it does breed that for sure.
That's, you touch on something that's really important. I think that we can be from so many different walks of life. And I think we are fairly similar in age, though I feel like I might be the oldest one on the panel. I'm not gonna put myself out there. But we can, I've had friends that were in their 70s because of music. I've had friends that were, I've had people that, maybe not friends, but compatriots that were in their teens because they looked up to me and we could teach each other something. So it's really, and then you have people from, and now with the digital world, you can have people from everywhere that either are, want to learn from you, want to get to know you, want them to know you, or you to know them. And it's really a beautiful thing that that maybe doesn't get spoken about too much outside of the communities, is that
it almost becomes insular.
It does, yeah, and community is amazing, but that community can be this beautiful blossom of something that we might not have seen earlier, because it's like, oh yeah, you're a painter, I'm a painter. Oh, you're a singer, I'm a singer. Like, let's have conversations with novelists and dancers, and sometimes we get stuck in our little worlds, but it's so important to then be able to be as authentic as we want to be, to say, all right, I'm going to open myself up to these other people that are doing something that touches me, but is completely different. And that's another way of making this space more diverse and authentic and safe and equitable for all of us.
Yeah, and that's why it's important for institutions to like chase after that, right? You don't want the same type of people who like the same type of thing to feel like that's where the only place they could go. You want a mix of people, you know what I mean? Being a younger person in the room more often than not, it's just like, okay, so why are you here? And it's like, oh wow, you get it. You want, and then you have great conversations with people, and it's just like the age or the cultural differences really take a back seat, and with the commonalities, what drives the conversation, and then you can create some really good bonds because they're based on something nice, authentic.
And it's nice to see diverse people talk about this, so that there might be somebody that's not confident enough in themselves and in the space they want to be in, because they see, oh, I can't go to the Guggenheim, like everybody at the Guggenheim looks like this. I can't, you know, present my work at Lincoln Center because everybody looks like that. But it's now like, oh no, you see these, you know, 20, 30 year old people from all walks of life going into these spaces and presenting themselves and be like, no, I belong here too. Like, yeah, and that's like, what it's about.
Not to like completely take too much of the time on this topic, but I would love to share like my early experiences going to fairs, like going down to Art Basel and going to Scope or going to Armory or Freeze or all these, like I'm paying $50 a ticket to go into Armory to see like modern and contemporary art and like, you know, galleries from all over Europe. And they up and down me and they look me, and I would in the beginning feel rushed. I tell people I got my gallery walk down, because you feel rushed. You're like, I don't know the pacing. I don't know how I should present myself. But then I realized it's just like, no, I need to be centered in who I am and then ask like genuine, authentic questions. So I always lead with like, where's the artist from and how old are they? Because it's like maybe something that I could relate to. And a lot of times where it's like, oh, it's a young artist, and like all of a sudden I'm interested in it. And curators or gallery attendants will be like, oh, the artist is actually here. They're also young. And it's just like, oh, and we click, and then you create great relationships with it. And then after the galleries will see that, they're like, oh, this is what we should be encouraging young people, or we should be encouraging different people to do that. And then I've had like gallery owners be like, yeah, please sign up for our mailing list. Like, we'll invite you to all the openings. And it's just like, oh, cool. because I was being my genuine self and showing that interest.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Guggenheim was a good point. If we're going to share a little bit of stories, I guess I'll share the one me and JB actually, you know, he invited me to the Guggenheim and we went in there and we actually enjoyed restaurant week in there. Just two young Latinos enjoying some fine art and some, you know, some five Michelin star food. So I do agree with everyone. I think it's more of a just getting out of our comfort zones as well. And a lot, you know, also pushing our own people as in not just not of color, but people of our own age or people younger than us into these spaces that are available to us. You know, as a founder of Color Colors, like what we really do, we try to break that down, right? We try to make it so accessible to everyone. And that's why we try to do cool, hip things and work with like breweries and, you know, small businesses throughout Long Island that might, you know, we've done a show at a farm out east. You know, it was a horse rescue farm, Spirits Promise, which I love them. Marissa, she's great. But, you know, it's just bringing the space and just making it accessible for everyone. And, you know, not to keep dragging on the topic, but I guess this goes well with, you know, with the, let's go into the question, which was the artistic genres and which ones are more viable to promote, you know, diversity and inclusivity. I know Jeanette, that we went over this the other day. So if you want to start that off, I think that would be great.
So I kind of, this question took me aback for a moment because when it was presented, it was like, oh, you know, music is a great way to show off different things and different backgrounds and diversity and such. But I think it's important that each one of us has a version of ourselves that we don't know exists until we are exposed to something that touches us. And While I am a musician first, you know, I'm inspired by so much. I'm inspired by Toni Morrison, by Maya Angelou. I'm inspired by Star Wars. I'm inspired by all of these different things. Those weren't super different, but you know what I mean? They're not music. And I think it's important that we give space for people to explore so that, because all of our stories have been told in each different way. We are four representations of people who have told our story in different ways that still gets pushed and can be diverse. And I think it's important that we remember that and that it's not just about the genre, but it's about making the art accessible and open for people to be able to feel it. And for people to be comfortable in experiencing it. Because I know I've taught students that, you know, young middle school boys don't generally want to go to a dance show, right? That's generally not like, if you're thinking about modern dance or, you know, like Alvin Ailey, but then you might get that one person that's just like, he doesn't want to say that he liked it. But then if you have a relationship with that student or that person, and they're able to say, you know, that really touched me, then you have to be able to say, okay, we can do this in every genre and every art if we just allow ourselves to be open enough to let somebody else be touched by the art. So that's what I'll say about that.
That's a beautiful point. I was thinking about, thank you for saying that. I was thinking about something that connects to some of the previous points, but to this one as well, which is, you know, JB, you talked about like the commonality a lot. We've been talking about holding space, and Jeanette, you've been hitting the, you know, showing up authentically, which is like so substantial. I was thinking about like how, when it's right, when that art space or that community or that event or that, installation is right, usually it's like centered on empathy, which invites that authentic viewer. And it kind of, you know, it's like all the anecdotes we're sharing are like JB showing up to these fairs, like high energy, being passionate who he is, and that gets like reciprocated. And the point with the students, like I'm actually teaching middle school art right now. That's why I just moved out of Long Island like a month ago. And it's like, it's amazing what can happen when you like flip the switch on somebody by like introducing it to them in a way that they didn't think was right or didn't think was like normal, you know, like that dance show example. So if you allow people to explore and come about it or center it around that being empathetic, it usually like that's when it's right.
I don't know if Dylan or JB, you guys want to hop in on this question?
Sure. You hit the nail on the head, Joe. Like that empathy, and like again, coming from that curator perspective, it's storytelling. And I was at a gallery earlier today with Jose. We were visiting our good friend at Muñeca Art House, and we touched upon that exact topic. Like once you know an artist's story, that becomes a whole nother thing, and that applies in any genre. Like, and poetry was something that came to mind because a lot of times, like a really good poet will hit you right in the feels, and you just feel like they're speaking directly to you. Or you go to an art show, and I've had this experience. You go through the whole show, and then you get at the end of the door, and then you read the artist statement, and you realize, wow. Oh, and then you go back to the show and you go, oh, now I get that piece. And the example I used with Jose earlier is like one of the most famous American artists is Jackson Pollock. It's splattering on the wall. Like let's not kid ourselves about it. But when you learn his story and you learn everything he went through and you learn the hardships and the trials and tribulations that he poured into that process and how he broke through and stayed true to his course, then all of a sudden it becomes a whole nother experience. And you feel that. And I think that in any genre, if it's presented right through a curator, through a moderator, through a host, through whatever medium or tool or vehicle that it's living in, that's when it can really resonate with the audience, with the receiver, the audience.
I would say absolutely, because with pertaining to the arts, we all feed off of each other, you know, musicians, poets, drummers, what have you, painters. We feed off of each other. I literally, I don't know if I'm on main screen, if I'm correct where I'm supposed to be. So I saw a picture the other day on Instagram about 2 days ago. And it was a guy, it had some nudity in it, but the person who, the subject in the photo had the words painted, vote, right? And that just took me away. And I went straight into a poem from that picture. So I would definitely say we feed off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeanette, go ahead. I think you had a thought.
I was just gonna say, like, Dylan, that's so real, because I was literally scrolling on Instagram, and I think his name is, or was, Wayne Miller. He's a Black photographer. And there was a picture that was shared on Black Archives. And as soon as I saw it, lyrics came to my head and I went directly and wrote to it. And I think, Jose, you have a question about social media. And I just wanna say that in our time, while it can sometimes be a burden, it's a wonderful place to share, because things like that happen. Right? Like as an artist, as a creator, no matter what your genre, no matter what your medium is, you can get inspiration off of so much if you're just open to looking for it. But I just wanted to piggyback off what Dylan said, because that's so real, because it literally happened to me the other day too. So crazy.
I think, you know, coming from the art world myself, you know, I dabble a little bit in painting. And I guess I could chip in a little bit of an example that was recent as well. We're doing an event at the Walt Whitman Shops, and it's like, it's a mix of art and food trucks, and it's a whole market. We're just a community event. I did these installations where everybody was able to paint, and I just did a quick, you know, a quick piece on it. And a lot of my art, I just try to put, you know, I put a direct message. I just like to just speak to my audience straightforward. And it just, the owner of the festival took a picture, and it, you know, I don't even think he's into art like that. And Eric, if you listen to this, I hope I'm wrong, but he just looked at the message and he was just, it said, you know, keep watering your garden because flowers will eventually bloom. He literally came up to me and he was like, thank you so much for that. And it was just because there has been so many things happening COVID related, and, you know, the market that he put on it, there was a lot of hardships that he went through to even get the permits and all this stuff. And just with that message, it resonated with him just because he was like, we got to keep pushing, you know. And I think, you know, that's what I think all the genres are really promoting the diversity. And I don't think there's much inclusivity, you know, how we feel. It's just different circles. And we all have that consciousness where we continue to get inspired through music, through poetry, through art in general. And I guess we're going to go into the topic of inspiration. And, you know, what we had talked about was social media and how that has changed the landscape as well of amplifying our voices. You know, I think what I had said regarding that question was social media influencers, right? I don't see them, a lot of them, as vital parts of our daily lives, just because a lot of them just post unrealistic goals or unrealistic things that we can't achieve. But then we see, I personally, sometimes I steer away from that just because I don't want to have that expectation on myself. So if we want to touch on that base of, you know, social media and its effect on amplifying everyone's voices. I'm actually going to pass, if Joe, if you want to speak a little bit, because I know you've been using social media very heavily recently for your solo exhibit.
Yeah. I think it's benefited me. We've, you know, on multiple fronts, like Dylan's point about you have like access to so much more inspiration that can just kind of click instantly, rather than like experiencing something that inspires you. You can just kind of, an image can do so much to you right away. So Instagram is just like, if you end up swiping, it could go two ways, because you could get really bogged down and it could just be like pointless meme stuff, or it could be like bogged down and you feel terrible about what's happening, or you feel terrible about yourself, or like you see other people seem like they're doing amazing and you feel like you're not. But then it could also, it'll also push you forward. And I've tried to like not be active as a consumer so much, but use it as a, like, as a tool. Like, I just think of it as something in my tool belt. Like, if I'm able to post it, and like, I care about documenting my work, because I feel like that's what, and it's always like, what are you going to do next? And if you don't really capture the moment of what you just did, it's hard to like build up like momentum in yourself and build up momentum in like an actual audience or a fake audience. Like, so I try to use Instagram as like, I think I'm talking out loud or thinking out loud a little bit right now, because like I don't have like some crazy following, but I just try to take it seriously as like a practice where I never want to like keep like not have my hand in something. So it acts as like a push for me in a way. It's like, I feel proud of the work I've done and I feel hungry to continue doing it. And like Instagram has helped feed that. So that's what I'll say about like how I've managed social media with my practice.
James, go ahead.
My take on social media is, I don't know, like I definitely felt like a lot like of what you were saying, Joe, but I think, yeah, you gotta own it. You can't let it own you. And at the end of the day, I really do feel like it's smoke and mirrors, especially on like that influencer tip. And because a lot of the times you don't even like, now you know who views your social media, but even still, there are people who come across your stuff and you might not even know it, right? Like your name is in rooms that your body's not in yet through social media. And that's if you stay authentic, like to double down on a lot of the points we've been talking about. If you're just doing it for the gram, most people will realize that, right? And it's not going to come across off as real and genuine and authentic. But if you're genuinely like doing it regardless of your followers, and because I do work in the creative content and the creative strategy world, and I've had worked with ad agencies and stuff like that, I saw the trend from influencers to micro influencers and like impressions to like engagement. So it's just like, cool, you could have a million followers and get paid $100,000 for an ad, but if only like 10% of your million followers even click on it, versus someone who has like 10,000 followers and 75% of their followers like click on it, engage with it, it's that smoke and mirrors thing. It's just like, just because we got that influencer who has like a million followers, it doesn't really mean it's reaching a million people, because their audience knows that with how they're coming across or what they're projecting to it. And not getting bogged down in that. And from like my own, go ahead.
My bad, JB, go ahead, sorry.
No, from like my own experience of just like going out and like being known for, it's weird, but why I say it's smoke and mirrors. Like there was a phase where I was literally at every art show at Chelsea, I was there at every opening, meeting artists, so on and so forth. And people would be in my Instagram DMs like, hey, how's your gallery going? I'm like, when did I ever say I owned a gallery? And it just, people had this perception of stuff. And I'm just like, that's not the case at all. Or like, people swore I was an artist. I'm like, by no means, I've never posted my art. Whenever I post other people's art, I make sure I tag them specifically. So it's just like doubling down on the authenticity and what you need to get from it. And like centering yourself, I think, as a creative of like, what is it really serving for you?
If I could just jump in here, we got a comment. Sure. I was reading the comment and you almost said the exact same thing at the exact same time. Christoph Lima just posted, influencers post the fantasy.
Mm.
And JB, you almost said the exact same thing in different words. You used the word influencers, which I think is a big part of that. So I just thought I'd throw that in.
It's one, yeah, of the- for sure. For sure.
It's interesting because it feels like, as a musician, the same for art, but I'll speak from the music standpoint. It feels like the promoter has left, right? Mm. The job of promoter is gone. Venues don't hire promoters. The musician has to be the promoter themselves. And it as we're talking, it feels almost like the influencer is now the promoter. And they are very specific promoters, right? So they're not creating anything necessarily, nor do they have a large stake in what happens afterwards. They are here to promote a product or to promote an experience and get people to see it, and that's it. And what can happen, my master's degree was in something called transmedia storytelling. And what that is the creation of a big story world, then bringing it and branching it out. So for instance, like Pirates of the Caribbean or Harry Potter, something like that, that has a big movie world. Then you have cartoons. Marvel is a great example. And something that social media, Instagram, and the internet can do, and we speak about a lot, is democratize art. But we still have the influence of the larger institutions. So it's not necessarily democratized, because Beyoncé can still drop an album without any promotion because she's Beyoncé. So there are levels to this, but if we understand that our influence and that our, what's the word, not influence, but also our experience and what we are inspired by comes from the things that we gravitate towards, it's important that we curate our own experiences on these platforms. And I think, Joe, you said it, like, you are not a consumer, you know, instead of consuming, create. I have taken that up. I don't want to necessarily consume everything. I'm curating my experience so that I see the things that I want to see and then put out what I want to put out. And it's more about creating than consuming. And I think like we've all said, we can get bogged down in that consuming aspect of it. But as artists, it's important to keep some sort of sense of self and what we mean to say, rather than necessarily always be influenced by whatever else is going on. And I think social media has the can do that to us, unfortunately, is like, oh, well, if this person is doing this kind of music, then I need to do this kind of music so that people could listen to me. That's not necessarily the case. And that's never been the case. But now, since it's in our pocket, it's much easier to get like bogged down with just like, oh, yeah, let's see who's doing what. So I think as far as inspiration goes, it's important for each of us individually to not be afraid to say, yeah, I'm not going to follow Kate Moss anymore. She doesn't make me feel good. I'm not going to follow YG. He doesn't make me feel good. And focus on the things that bring us inspiration. Sometimes things that we don't like can bring us inspiration, of course. But I think as for the artist, it's really important that we curate our experience as well as curate how we also influence other people on the platforms.
Yes, absolutely. The curation part. And can social media amplify our voices? It definitely can, right? But at what cost? Like, so what is the long-term effects on social media? And can we promote, can we be our organic selves with our craft, not being too heavily engaged in social media? You know, these are just all questions. And I'm not sure if we all have the answer right now, but posing them and pondering on them is a start.
Joe said something important to go off that. It's a tool, right? It's another tool in our toolbox. It's not necessarily the first. It's not the last. It's not the biggest. It's not the best. But it's a tool.
Yeah. And, just like everything else, I was going to, you kind of touched on it, JB, with saying like the influencer, it kind of, I forget the phrase, but I was thinking of the phrase like, whether it's like the institution or the snobby gallery at the art fair or like, you know, whatever, the money and the clout can like muddy the water with whether it's Instagram or whatever the platform or event is. But again, if there's like the soul in it, I feel like influencing is kind of soulless work. Whereas if you're using it like a tool, it's just helping you move forward, which is all about what you're after.
Yeah, for sure. You're absolutely right. And like what you said, Dylan, too, like you, as creatives, as artists, you have to ponder these questions and like find where your middle ground and your center, where it's just like your balance and you can express and be your authentic self. But then like you guys are saying, like, it's your tool. And I think that is, not to get too like, you know, in the weeds here, but that's just the capitalist system getting into that. Like, you can look at it at any social media platform, whether it started with Facebook, where you can have real conversations before there was groups, before the groups, like when the groups were actually just like comment threads or Twitter or Instagram, before there was metrics, before the chronological order was removed, before promoted ads, before a story. So a lot of the times, like, it was easier as artists to create that organic content and authentic content that could live and could be received. But then, you know, you have your little tool you've been sharpening, and then here comes a big, bad capitalistic machine that has more resources and can make a bigger, louder, sharper tool. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're caught in a tailspin because these bigger entities are flying past you. It's like, you should double down and stay centered on what you've really been doing. And that is a process for each an individual creative that they have to go on their own, right? Obviously, it helps when you have institutions or mentors or other allies or lateral individuals that can help guide you and you can take note from them. But it is a journey on its own. And then at the end of the day, it's just like, I personally never forget that this is just a screen, you know, like at the end of the day. And it is difficult in a COVID world and a post-COVID world that the human element of this stuff is really important. And like, you're ultimately doing that for that human element, even if it is through a screen. And it sounds like I'm being contradictory. It's just like, you're creating a moment for someone and they just happen to be getting it through a screen, or that moment that you're creating through a screen is going to be eventually a product that's going to come to them in the mail. It's something that they're going to listen to when they turn the phone off, whatever, what have you.
So I think it all goes back to the same word. it's the authenticity, right? Of what we're posting and what we're sharing. And we just had this conversation, James, too, was, you know, with the whole initiative that, you know, that Color Colors put together for the, you know, for Black authors through, you know, through a local business promoting their books, their poetry books. But, you know, how, you know, and I express my discomfort for, like, you know, it, a lot of things that we do at Color Colors are brand new, and it's been a uphill battle for us because we're so fairly new, and all these ideas are just things that I can't even put into words. A lot of times that's why we document a lot of our work through video recaps and all this. But I guess how far do we really have to go with the social media to get that, to get where we want to be? Or does it even matter, you know, to how authentic we want our work to show at this point, right? Do the views really count? And, you know, it sucks because what you said is right. Another entity can come around and they have more money and they could just take this idea. Just like we've seen with a lot of artists. And now that, I guess we could get a little bit into that topic, like Ivan Orama, you know, the whole Nike fiasco that we've seen, you know, we personally know Ivan, but the social media also harm the authenticity and what we actually shared just because we're afraid of these bigger entities taking ideas from us. I don't know if we want to talk a little bit about that, because I think that is important, because, you know, I think that is something that might interfere in us amplifying or just putting our stuff out there, you know?
I think intellectual property needs to be focused on much more than it has been. Mm-hmm. It's really important that we as artists, institutions, we find a way to back these artists to make sure that their intellectual property is kept sacred. In a capitalistic society, like James said, nothing is sacred. And so it's really important that we stick together as artists and institutions, in any institution, educational, front-facing, museum such, that we focus on how to protect our intellectual property. And that can be very harmful. I have a friend that went through it with a very big time artist, musical artist. And so it's really important that we find a way to say, you know, it can be a big institution. Hey, we're gonna support, whether that means money into copywriting, something to protect our intellectual property. And that also means protecting it up on the hill with laws, you know, focusing on the protection of our intellectual property, because without that, especially in a social media world, our stuff can be stolen so quickly. And, you know, things have been stolen all throughout time.
But think about from the beginning of time.
But think about the Supreme logo. Think about, there's so many things. You don't even have to list.
Yeah.
But it's important that we focus on having conversations about the importance of protecting intellectual property.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's just like, unfortunately, that has always been the case in like capitalistic and just in general, right? And there's also the harsh reality of like, there has to be that sacrificial lamb that has to get caught out, where you're just like, oh, we learned from that, right? And then it is, the onus is on us to like come together as creatives and be like, well, we have to draw a line and let that be the precedent that's set, and then use our rights to push that. And there are some really cool forward-thinking attorneys who want to push for intellectual property rights. But that, I try to look at it in the holistic view, where it's just like this is still in its infancy. It is moving very rapidly. Yeah. And when it's like, when you look down, obviously the floor is flying past you, but when you look out to the horizon, it's just like, the real longstanding work, that's what we should really be focused about. And the issues that work, like, you know, whether it's music, whether it's poetry, whether it's graphic design, anything like that, for sure. And you're right, where it's like, these same institutions that a lot of times want to like welcome us with open arms are not transparent. Well, like, they're really looking to get, everyone's focused on the bottom line, you know? So it's like, okay, if that's what you want and we want to be super transactional, let's be transactional. Do you have my back? Because you want me to be here. And if not, the artist community will always have the artist community that's on the streets, digital or physical, and that will always be there. something that I thought about before, I forgot who mentioned it. It's just like, what was the most beautiful part about the resurgence of mural art in the last 7 to 10 years, where it democratized that experience, where it's just like, yo, these were like, when I went down to Basel in 2012, which feels so long now, it was just like artists from all over the world, and you could go and talk to them and interact with them. And it was just, everyone was literally on the same street. It was just plain and equal. And then, you know, if you follow that world where all of a sudden walls, literal walls, are being carved out to steal Banksy pieces and be shown down at Basel itself, it's like, this is not what it's about. Mm. And a lot of the real patrons of the art were like, nah, this isn't it. This is not it. Yep. And, you know, it is what it is. That work will still sell for hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars, but like that true essence. And then those artists will double down and be like, no, that's, and they make light of it and they laugh about it. That's why, to me, Banksy still has that card where he could play, where it's just like, I'm still laughing at you guys for taking my street art and then bringing it into a space that it wasn't intended to be in.
Yep.
Dylan and or Joe, do you guys want to hop in this question, or do you want me to keep pushing the agenda?
The agenda, unless Joe has something to say.
I had an example that I just saw. Speaking of IP, we interviewed Kid Super with Colored Colors last over the summer at some point.
You're gonna say fashion. Last year? It's been a couple of months.
Yeah,
I know, right? Weeks or months in this year.
And he did this like stop motion animation, virtual Paris Fashion Week show, like over the summer, at the end of the summer. And he just started posting about how Jeremy Scott like totally bit his thing for his brand, like totally is doing a stop motion dolls wearing the clothes.
Wow.
So it's crazy. Just like you said,
but the real, no,
the bigger money is, they just,
yeah, but like, I feel like, and I have to tell this to a lot of younger artists, it's like, yo, don't get lost at the real no. Like, I came up in the hypebeast era where it's just like, nah, you can tell when someone's authentic and someone's not. You know what I mean? You can tell when someone is doing it just because they think that's what it's needed. And that echoes up the ladder to institutions where they're just like, oh, we're going to bring in this cool artist because that's what everyone else is doing. It's like, no, it's not going to last. You know what I mean? That authenticity will prevail, and it does just have to be mirrored by all parties. It is sucky and it does affect people's livelihoods for sure. But like I said, if you're looking at like the long-term view, like, we just got to be resilient. And it has happened. It happened in hip hop. It happened in all other forms. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, it's a slow burn.
So let's touch on, sorry, not to cut anyone off, but I guess this is a good segue into the next question. Does cancel culture make it harder for different voices to exist or help moderate artistic expression? Since we're talking about longevity and all this, you know, all this other craziness with, you know, intellectual property, but now let's talk about what cancel culture has done this year. And just because we do want to, you know, get to this question and one more, we do have 23 minutes left. So if anyone wants to talk, you know, on that base of what cancel culture has done to artists and, you know, the way that everybody's expressing, do we think that that has taken away from people, you know, now quiet, you know, being quiet for who they are just because of things that might have happened in the past?
Well, it has, what it has done, it went from the physical and then you went to a virtual space. So the new norm is doing everything virtual. And that affected the bottom line, right? Which is so important. It affected income, to be more specific, for artists, you know, whereby you could have, as a poet, you know, I'm a spoken word artist, curated an event, do an Eventbrite link, you know, and sell tickets and sell things at the venue, you know, that affected the bottom line there. If you do poetry workshops in school, you can't go in the school setting no more. So I would say things going virtual and then having to pivot and go virtually is a challenge for artists, you know? So I would say it has been a challenge with the new norm.
I think it was a different topic. I think what we were referring to was cancel culture, which has been a huge topic throughout this whole summer. But you do bring a good point of the new norm changing this whole, you know, everything that has happened in for artists themselves. But Jeanette, you can continue.
I will say briefly that cancel culture has made people aware of the things that they might have felt comfortable saying before that they no longer feel comfortable saying, and I think that's a good thing. I don't necessarily think everybody needs to be canceled for something that they did in their past, but they need to be made aware that that the past is no longer right now and that can't carry on. You can't speak like that. You can't do those things. Those things are no longer acceptable even as artists. There is a space where you can be respectful. There's a space where you can be expressive. And then there's a space where you can be offensive and doing it for some other reason than being authentic. And if that's authentically you, then you need to be canceled because you need to do some soul searching and see why it is that you're saying the things that people are telling you should not be said. And doing the things that people are telling you should not be done. So I think cancel culture is important. It's hard. And I think that it's hard for people to separate the art from the artist. Sometimes there has to be a personal choice. You know, if I go to the club and I hear Chris Brown, I don't dance. If I go to the club and hear R. Kelly, facts. I don't dance. Facts. If I go to the club, you know what I mean? Like, that's just my personal choice. I'm not buying any more of their albums. I'm not streaming them. Right. If I don't agree with it, I don't agree with it. And I think everybody has the right to not agree with something, because if you're being your authentic self and somebody doesn't agree with it, great. That's actually fantastic. But it's up to everybody for themselves to say, nah, this ain't it. And I'm not going to support it anymore. And how do we support things? And how do things affect the bottom line? By their money. So I'm not going to your concert. Sorry. And if it's as small, again, as being in a space where the song is on, you know, you can honor the fact that this person was amazing at what they did, but they're not an amazing individual. So I'm no longer going to support their art. And that's just what it is.
Yeah. No, bars. and also, like, the cancel culture thing is tricky because I feel like it's just it serves a good purpose, and it obviously has a detrimental side to it, because it's just like, hey, I have a criticism of you. Sometimes those are very real criticisms. And then it's just like, hey, I also have that criticism. And then other people say, I'm not going to speak because I don't have that criticism. So the only voices you hear are the critical voices. That's and now true. It just sounds like a lot of people are yelling at you and condemning you when sometimes they are, right? And other times they're just like, no, I'm being critical, and you need to show more growth, and you need to let that go. And then a lot of the times the other people who are left in the room not saying anything are just like, oh, I guess this is how we have to move. It's like, nah, you can disagree. You could like Chris Brown, like you brought that up, or R. Kelly, like I 100% feel the same way. Like, I don't bang with them. Like, it's just not like you could let other people live when they enjoy them. But it's just like, on that regard, like, cool. And yeah, they're talented, or they have talent, and they produce things in this world. Like, yo, we all sang some R. Kelly at our graduation at one point in our lives.
My first solo in middle school, yo. Like,
you feel me? Like, we all sang some R. Kelly at a graduation at some point in our lives. But like, now you just have to understand that, like, it's coming up at that moment. Doesn't mean that that's the only thing that that person should be known for, but that has to go back into like the capitalist system and the 24-hour news cycle. And it's just like, that's what's being fed down your throat at this moment. Sometimes people get canceled for a day, and then like next week they're back on top. Yes. And then it's just like, we are still learning how to digest that. Like, wait, weren't they canceled? It's like, nah, you misconstrued being critical of someone and holding them accountable, which is now something that we are empowered to do as consumers. Like, yo, time out. I'm gonna hold you accountable for this. Don't get it twisted. Like, even though you're taking my money, or you've taken my money in the past, or I've consumed your product or your work, but I'm just gonna bring that up to you. And it has a snowball effect. Yeah, for sure. And it's like, you're able to hold their feet to the fire, which is a good thing, I think. But you also have to take it with like a grain of salt, where it's just like, mob mentality can get out of hand. And that has happened in other iterations in society, where we just didn't have it documented. Like, witch trials, you know what I mean? Or like just stoning people for a misunderstanding. Like, yes, there is some validity to it for sure, but then there's other times where it's like it didn't have to be that serious, or you just because you thought it was that serious, not everyone else felt that way.
I just want to say one word: nuance. That's
facts.
It.
Facts.
Nuance.
I'm just going to jump in here. I was curious. I wanted to ask that question because it's there's just certain things I don't understand, and I see things snowballing. Certainly, people that do reprehensible things or are reprehensible people have made some great art. Mm-hmm. And I like how you put it, Jeanette. I just won't get up and dance to that song. You know, that's what it. And I'm going back to like you know the cancel culture. You know, back to the 70s with people like Jane Fonda and Vanessa Redgrave. They're two of the best actresses of the 20th century. You know, I watch their movies because of something they did in 19, or if agree, disagree. And I think that like I said, there has to be some sort of separation and some nuance with it as well. And there, what I do think is these are grounds for conversations. If something's happened that, you know, is this movie racist? Well, when it was, it wasn't considered. If they were making it nowadays, mm-hmm. they would do it like that. Let's mm-hmm. talk about that. And I think that's the important thing. And that's the beauty of the arts is we can, you know, go back and look at, well, that was wrong, but, you know, let's talk about why and how it could be allowed to have been like that then. Go ahead.
No, and or how many times we've learned about artists being bare about their pain and their pain that they inflicted on other people, and it's some of the most beautiful art. So like we haven't retroactively canceled people who have, you know, created some of the most beautiful, meaningful work that we recognize as things that hurt other people, right? It's just because of the way social media is now. It's just like I can like all of a sudden this is trending, all of a sudden this person is canceled. It's like that's not it. Like Jeanette said, it's the nuance for it. And you can't get bogged down and it's just like, because it's trending and they're canceled, it's just like, it's a holistic, it's a blanket statement on that.
If we take the onus, and by we, I mean people that want to have the conversation, if we take it upon ourselves to have those conversations in spaces that people will be able to see them, I think it's important, you know, because if somebody is canceled for something, there has to be a reason that it was so demonizing, right? So if there is a moment, a space to talk about what it is that's actually going on, so that it also honors the reason why they were canceled. Because if you have a situation where, like Tory Lanez got canceled because he lied on Meg Thee Stallion, shooting her and making her unsafe, right? And so if you are going to just cancel rather than having that conversation of, well, why did Meg feel this way? Why did Tory feel like, and some people will say, no, we don't even need to have that conversation.
Right.
And
that's
okay. If you don't want to be a part of that conversation, that's fine. But what we also need to talk about is gun violence. We need to talk about male-female relationships. We need to talk about those things that the canceling comes upon. So if we can't have those conversations, we will forever be canceling rather than moving the conversation.
And people
along.
Get lazy. People get lazy. It's like, oh, that's what we do, and we canceling that person. All right, cool. And then it's just like, yo, eventually everyone's gonna get canceled. Like and eventually, like,
right, the momentum.
Everyone is gonna get canceled for something because that's how you learn, right? There are people like you do have to be held accountable, and you do have to pay the cost for whatever, you know. Every action has a consequence. But like you have to be involved in that, and that's what social media lets you be lazy. It's just like, yeah, I like that, so I agree with this. Canceled.
Sorry, not to cut anyone off. We just have a question, and let's take 2 minutes so we can get to the last question before our time's up. Christoph Lima asks, "What do you guys think about cancel culture on dead artists?" So we want to take 2 quick minutes to answer that.
I was going to mention that because Miles Davis and James Brown were some of the worst women beaten people that you could know. And yet they made some of the best art in the entire world. So it's, I think, again, cancel culture needs to be more of a personal choice than a, I mean, that's hard to say. We can recognize somebody's demons and we can say they're reprehensible and they can they can serve justice. But I think the point of it is they need to serve justice, right? R. Kelly needs to serve some justice for the things that he did. Like there needs to be justice had. So doing it on dead people, I think is more of a personal choice. And if we as a society conclude that we don't want to amplify their art because of what they did, then that's our choice. But we have to ask the question, are we ready to do that?
I just, I'm going to throw in, you know, going back, the first name that came to me was Ike Turner. You know, maybe not somebody I want to sit down and have dinner with, you know, but, but, you know, that was an amazing musician. But what, you know, and then if you look at Tina Turner sort of turned all of that negativity
into some of the greatest art,
positive, you know, force, and really just made, reinvented herself, and probably much bigger than Ike ever was. And there's, you know, that's what I mean. There's a lot of, you know, where do you draw the line? And there are personal choices. And I can listen to something and not condone what somebody did. And
we can't be mad at people who make that choice. Like, if you still want to listen to that and go enjoy it, like, I that's you. I don't live in your head. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be mad and like go crazy about it, for sure, for sure.
Now, would I give them the Nobel Prize? Probably not.
Authenticity
and growth are now the topics in here. So now let's get back to the last question. You know, we're running out of time. I think this has been great. I think we could literally go on for hours at this point. We're all on the same wavelength. Sure. But what is the vision? What is the utopian society that we all see in being able to amplify our voices? What are the, you know, and we talked about this between amongst ourselves just to be ready for this question, because I do think this could go on forever. But it's what do we think that we need in order to amplify and be at to the level that we want to be, not just for ourselves, but for our peers and the people that we stand for and everybody behind us. Whoever wants to start, go ahead.
I'm gonna make this quick. I'm gonna try to. Institutions, give us the resources to build our own tables. Do not tear us down when our tables are built. And respect the table that we sit at, because we have always had to try to have a space at another person's table. So a utopian world for me is non-capitalistic, but I won't get into that because that's a longer conversation. So in this moment, if you want us to, if you want our voices to be amplified, then you need to give us the resources, tell us where those resources are to make our own table, to then amplify our voices, and then be in concert with us when we want to exchange ideas and respect and honor our table. That's what I'll say.
That was a lot to chew. That was heavy. And I thought those were some very key and important points you just made. I would say that I'm going to pass it right along. I'm going to let somebody take it away because I have a lot going on in my head.
Don't lose that, though, because I wanted to hear what you have to say.
Joe, who were you pointing to?
Solange.
Jeanette was talking about tables.
I didn't see. Okay. I didn't see the image. I didn't glance quickly enough. Okay.
Joe, do you have anything to say on this question?
It's a matter of access. Yeah. From like tiny examples to the biggest examples, it comes down to access. Like I was able to make bigger paintings because I had access and resources and support to get bigger materials, and I had space and time. So space, time, freedom, those are always things I say. I have like a gratitude practice I try to do. And I'm always like, I think about giving thanks for having space, time, and freedom to create in whatever, like those like three elements are always like the it's hard to produce or like be in a space to make art when you don't have access to those three things. That's what I found. So I would say if everyone could have that, we'd be able to actually like that, the phrase cream rises to the top. It's like, say, but if the time, space, freedom was, like we all had that same access, then it would be like, well, what'd you do, you know, rather than everything else like mixed in that bag.
That is so deep, because that means so many things for so many different people. So for everybody on this call, having the space, time, and freedom to do something means that there needs to be equitable changes made, mm-hmm. not only in the institutions, but in our society, to gather that space, time, and freedom. And that's so important. I'm gonna start saying that too, because that is dope. Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that.
Thanks.
For the record, each of us on the panel, we have to curate an event. We have to do a show. We have to.
Agreed.
I actually, to that point, I wanted to say one of the questions that we were prompted with but didn't get to was about, I don't want to take too much time to say this, just role models. I think one artist who am I to amplify her, she's like a superstar, but her name is Stephanie Dinkins, and she was a professor of mine, but she's like, basically her shtick is she's like a multimedia artist, digital technology and AI. She like makes friends with robots, basically, but she holds these events. Stephanie Dinkins, she holds these events of like all different people from the AI, engineering, biology, painting, photography, entrepreneur, you know, like all these different people, and they come and they don't have like a set agenda, but just to like share time and space together. And so that sounds like it's like very ideal, and like people create spaces like that. And I feel like we're all like moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Not to get too much off topic either, but I think that's crazy now that you put those words in my head. And if we really, I mean, I don't know if this is going to sit well, but Kanye West, what he's creating out in the middle of nowhere is literally what that is. It's a space for artists. And he said this, space for artists to be free to create and just, you know, be in this room where people can just interact and just share the same ideas. Which I think that is utopian for me, is just to be able to give spaces to people. And that's what I try to do with Color Colors, just give that space. Maybe not as much freedom, because we haven't gotten to that point. But, you know, I do think that was a good point. If Dylan or JB, if you want to chime in before we run out of time.
I just want to say, as I'm being mindful of time, one of the points that, and I feel like it's, you know, it's great that I'm interjecting with it here, Jeanette Berry, and I'm loving your vibe, by the way, Jeanette. When you said each of us have a version of ourselves that we don't know exists until we are exposed to something that touches us. And I feel like this is the word exposure comes into play, you know? So I feel like that's important, that we have these exposures and we have these forms of support and different things that we may need. Yeah. That's my little 2 cents.
To touch on, like, just to piggyback off of your point, like that exposure, and with that version of like utopic, maybe if it's like, I think it's just getting it out there, right? Like the artist creating and letting that exposure manifest how it manifests. Because you look at hip hop, where it's just like, yo, I just wanted to create, even if it was like under a street lamp, and then it naturally had exposure to people because people had nothing else to do. Especially in the Bronx in the 70s when it was hot and everyone lived in a building, they didn't want to be indoors. They were exposed to other things. Now online during 2020 and COVID, where everyone's on their screen more often than they were ever before in their lives, that exposure lives. And what your perception of like a utopic world of that, it's just like, it has to take forms for everyone in different ways. And like, to me, it would just be like, forget, you know, bigger machines, bigger institutions, all of that. Like, let the art live on itself, because you're always going to be chasing that. Like, you're always going to be looking to push the culture is always going to be ahead of the person. You know what I mean? And it's ethereal. Like it can't really be touched. It has to be experienced. And it just takes different forms for you to experience it now, because we live in a digital age. So it's hard to even like put into words what a utopic world would look like, or utopian artistic community. That's what we chase, all as creatives, right? Like, we're creating something new, giving people new experiences, just to continue that. Like, don't ever lose sight of that, however it manifests.
I just want to share one kind of quote from Lovecraft Country, which is my new favorite show. And she asks in the show, what would you look like uninterrupted? And I think that's the idea of utopian, of freedom, is what I would look like uninterrupted, what my art would look like uninterrupted, what my living would look like uninterrupted.
And, you know, to touch on that, uninterrupted, I think, and we'll close out with that. This has been great. And this is kudos to you, Mark, because we've touched on this. This was not, you know, this panel wasn't built, and you didn't pick me to, you know, be a token here, or have us all be tokens. You let me create this, and just uninterrupted, you let me flow through this conversation and pick who I wanted to be at this table and the questions that we wanted to discuss. So I think this is, you know, that is what utopia is. And you're absolutely correct. That was a beautiful quote. And once again, I want to say thank you to you, Mark, because you did that today as well. You let me and all of us here on this panel, you know, just be ourselves and just talk about what we want to talk about and express our emotions.
Well, you know, and you know, you are just awesome artists and you're awesome human beings. I have enjoyed this so much. I you know, to wrap it up, you know, one of my biggest dilemmas is, you know, I run an arts council, and we cannot be all things to all people, as much as I would love to be. But my table is open. Right now, I got crumbs on it. You know, these are very hard time for the arts. But I do know, if you want to, you want to talk about curating something, I do have a building and I do have some PR. So if there's things you're interested in doing, you got to talk to me or to my employees, and maybe we can come up with some ideas. I'm not promising anything. If we can figure out how to fund something, we can do it. You know, and also, I see I'm not the only arts council on Long Island. Liz Moraki from Baca was just on this. So there are arts councils, and we are connecting more and more with each other now. We're very interested in doing a lot of things that maybe 5 years ago we wouldn't even thought of doing. We are desperate, desperate to
get Diego's heart singing right now somewhere.
Bring it to me. And let's try to make some great things happen. That's the whole point of this. And, you know, the talent just here, the vision is mind-boggling.
I want to say thank you to Liz, too. Sorry to cut you off. You know, she gave me the opportunity in Color Colors to put in a drive-in event in the middle of Amityville for musicians. So, you know, like I said, it's progressing, and I'm very happy to be in the middle of all this, you know, how everybody's moving on Long Island now with the arts.
Yeah, shout out to people like Liz and Mark for amplifying our voices.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out Liz because she gave, once again, opened her door to me and my community as well. So shout out to you, Liz.
Do it. You are all welcomed at the Huntington Arts Council anytime. And, you know, it just, unfortunately, you know, economic reality is kind of our worst enemy right now. And it's going to get worse. We're heading for some very scoundrel times. But we also are very creative people, and we can make a lot of very creative things happen. And absolutely, I think we all need each other very much right now. So I just can't thank you enough for doing this. I respect you all. I've had the best conversation, and yeah, I would be happy to go for 3 more hours, but I do have to work tomorrow. To worry about tomorrow's problems, but that's tomorrow. Thank you so much, Joe, JB, Jeanette Berry, also JB, Dylan, Jose, for putting this together. We will continue to be in touch with each other, and we will make things happen, because that's what we do.